And it has already been mentioned a couple of times, you know, tomorrow's Mother's Day, you know, very special day. Looked up some things online, and I'd like to share with you, in by way of introduction here, an article that I ran across in the National Geographic about the background of Mother's Day and the mother and her daughter that are largely responsible for the establishment of the day that we will celebrate tomorrow, and that is Mother's Day on the second Sunday in May of each year. As early as the 1850s, the West Virginia women's organizer by the name of Ann Reeves Jarvis held what were called Mother's Day work clubs to improve sanitary conditions and to try to lower infant mortality by fighting disease and by curbing milk contamination. And she also organized groups that tended to wounded soldiers on both sides during the Civil War of the United States from 1861 to 1865. This lady was very, you know, very active, very much the organizer and the activist of her day. In the post-Civil War years, Jarvis and other women organized what were called Mother's Friendship Day picnics and other events as pacifist events uniting former foes. Their objective was to try to bring together, you know, people that had fought against each other in the Civil War and to try to, you know, to have some peace through their meetings. Around the same time, Jarvis had initiated a Mother's Day friendship for Union and Confederate loyalists across her state. But it was her daughter Anna, that is Anna Jarvis, who was most responsible for what we call Mother's Day, and who would spend most of her later life fighting what Mother's Day had become. So these two ladies, very instrumental, very, very much in the activist role. Moved by the death of her own mother in 1905, Anna Jarvis, who never had children of her own, was the driving force behind Mother's Day observances beginning in 1908. Largely through Anna Jarvis's efforts, Mother's Day came to be observed in a growing number of cities and states until U.S. President Woodrow Wilson officially set aside the second Sunday in May in 1914 for the holiday. And here's a quote from a lady who is now a professor of history at West Virginia Wesleyan University, but this was from her PhD dissertation. She said, "For Jarvis, it was the day where you'd go home to spend time with your mother and to thank her for all that she did. That it wasn't to celebrate all mothers. It was to celebrate the best mother you've ever known, your mother, as a son or a daughter." And that's why Jarvis, Anna Jarvis, stressed the singular Mother's Day, mother apostrophe S, rather than the plural mothers, plural apostrophe day. And that was of great significance to Anna Jarvis. Anna Jarvis's idea of an intimate Mother's Day quickly became a commercial gold mine. And we have a proclivity for that kind of thing in the United States, don't we? But that was the occurrence even, you know, in the very beginning. And centering on the buying and giving of flowers, candies, and greeting cards, a development which deeply disturbed Anna Jarvis. She set about dedicating herself and her sizable inheritance to returning Mother's Day to its reverent roots. And she was not successful in doing that, as we can see today. We saw a couple of surveys online about Mother's Day that said, moms want time spent rather than gifts. In 2021, the average American spent $220 a person on Mother's Day. Spent $176 on Father's Day, so the mothers clearly won out on that one. Saw one projection where that in this year that the average American is forecast to spend about $245 on Mother's Day in whatever one form or another. My purpose this afternoon is twofold. One is I'd like to look, first of all, at the connection with biblical commands of the day that we're going to celebrate. And then the second area, I'd like to share with you things that I wish I had told my mother. And some of you that will resonate with more than others. As Mr. Hammer mentioned, if your mother is alive, then you obviously have, you know, different recollection, different memories, and different experience with her than if your mother has passed away. You know, I was thinking about the connection with biblical commands, and, you know, I thought, isn't it amazing that that's the only one, really, the fifth commandment, that we can pretty closely connect with a holiday that we keep in the United States? You know, I was thinking, wouldn't it be nice if we could have a Thou Shalt Not Covet Day, you know, and we'd celebrate that on one particular day during the year, or, you know, no lying for one day, which would cut out all the hypocrisy that we see in our country at the present time. And Mr. Worthen, in that second hymn that he led, basically covered all the scriptures except for one that I have here. If you'd like to turn to them, I'd like to read both of the presentations of the fifth commandment, one in Exodus 20 and the other Deuteronomy 5, or I'll just read those to you. Their content's the same, presentation's a little bit different. But Exodus 20 and verse 12. Exodus 20 and verse 12. And as we sang, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Just short, succinct, to the point. Deuteronomy 5, verse 16 has a little bit more of a presentation to it than of Exodus 20, verse 12. Deuteronomy 5, verse 16 says this, honor your father and your mother as the Lord your God has commanded you. There's a different emphasis or a greater emphasis there. That your days may be long. So we see a result or a possible result there. And that it may be well with you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you. So essentially there's, you know, Deuteronomy 5:16 completely overlaps Exodus 20:12, but adds those three other clauses in there that have significant meaning to it. The Apostle Paul in the sixth chapter of Ephesians, where he's giving instructions to children, to families, and then to fathers, says this in the second verse of Ephesians 6, and I'll just read that to you. And basically, it is a paraphrase of Deuteronomy 5:16. He basically says the exact same thing, but the order is slightly different. But he makes one other point there that I think is very interesting. It says, honor your father and mother, and then there's a parenthetical thought or, you know, a clause here that is inserted, which is the first commandment with promise. Which is the first commandment with promise. And we read about the promises that were mentioned there in Exodus or in Deuteronomy 5 and verse 16. So we see this command to honor our father and to honor our mother. And the result is that if we do that, there is a commandment. It is a commandment of promise. You know, there are some very positive results that we can experience from that. There's one proverb that is, I find, very fascinating in the context of Mother's Day. It's Proverb 23 and the 22nd verse. Proverbs 23:22, if you want to turn to it, or I'll just read it to you. Proverbs 23, verse 22 out of the NKJV. Listen to your father who begot you, and do not despise your mother when she's old. And you think, wow. Why would there be the necessity to make that kind of a statement in the Proverbs? You know, listen to your father, listen to your dad, but when your mother is old, don't despise her. And I think, wow, that's an amazing statement to me. You know, looking up, you know, what the word despise means in this context, Strong's Outline of Biblical Usage adds two things. It says despise is to hold in contempt, or to hold as insignificant. So the proverb is basically telling us when roles have changed and we've moved from that state of total dependency on our mother through adolescence, teenage years, and into adult years, and into her senior years, don't hold her in contempt. Don't despise her in that regard. You know, don't treat her as insignificant. And I think it's a remarkable statement about, you know, the transition of roles and how those are to be paid attention to us or by us, and how we are to manage that. I want to read something to you from one of the commentaries. And every time I read this, it makes me a little bit mad. But I think it makes an interesting statement from the point of view of the commentator, with this on this particular verse. This is from the Adam Clark commentary. And that's what he has to say on despise not your mother when she's old. And his comment is this: a very necessary caution, as very old women are generally helpless, useless, and burdensome. Yet these circumstances do not at all lessen the child's duty, and this duty is strengthened by the divine command given here. And I'm thinking, I think you ought to go back and look up your own comment, and look up the Hebrew in that verse and think about it a little bit. But that's his comment. But he makes a pretty austere and a pretty stark characterization of mothers as they age. But he categorizes them as helpless, useless, and burdensome. I think very distinctly, haven't forgotten the contribution that his mother made to him with her life, regardless of what their relationship was. Just my two cents worth. But that's from the Adam Clark commentary. I'd like to read to you, continuing from a Life, Hope, and Truth article that was published this week, written by Jeremy Lallier, and it's entitled, Why Did God Give Us Mothers? And I'd like to read just about three paragraphs from excerpting from that article, because I really like the way that he phrased it. And from the article, this is a direct quote. It's through mothers that we're able to understand some of the distinct characteristics of God, both Father and Son. It's God, after all, who knows every tear we've ever cried. It's God who carries us in love and pity. It's God who takes us by the hand, who suffers when we suffer, and who shields us under the shadow of his wings. Jesus Christ even likened his concern for Jerusalem to a hen gathering, quote, her chicks under her wings, end quote. And for every one of these statements, he has a scriptural citation, which would take a lot of time to go through that. But if you're interested, he has a lot of material there in just that one paragraph. And then concluding in his third paragraph here, those aren't the kind of sentiments that mesh with the typical idea of a rugged John Wayne kind of man. But they are the kind of sentiments that naturally describe a good mother and our God. And I like the way that he phrased that. And now I'd like to move into the section here of sharing with you some things that I wish I had told my mother. And I want to give just a few bullet point statements about her background that led to her to shaping her being the person that she was. My mother was born in October of 1926, basically born and raised during the Great Depression. And that was a very significant event in her life and in the life of her family. She was the fifth of six children. One of her sisters died of the disease of diphtheria, which was apparently fairly common, in that part of the 20th century. And she never knew, that sister. But I grew up hearing her, tell us stories about her dad's experience and the care that the family provided for this daughter who died somewhere around between ages of 6 and 8, something like that. But that was also even though she never knew that sister personally, that was a very influential event in the family. Because of the type of work that my grandfather did, he was farmhand, ranch hand, did sharecrop type farming at different times. Work was very difficult to find in the area that they lived in at that time during the Great Depression. And so she was used to, and having personally experienced, as many of you here, have too, scarcity. And, she grew up at times where food for a family of seven was very scarce. And it was just practically at a bare survival level at different points in time. So that scarcity that she experienced influenced her for the rest of her life. And, you know, many of you that, or some of you that have lived through the Great Depression and have experienced that know exactly what that it's like and have experienced likely many of the same things. Very difficult to find employment, and as a result of that, the family moved very frequently in search of some type of regular, you know, employment so that my grandfather could support the family. That there were many moves, and that was very influential in my mother's life. My mother also lost a daughter, one of my sisters, the older of the three, that was 2 years younger than me. She lost that daughter when my sister was 21 years old. That had profound impact on my mother. It was something that she, to a large degree, just put away in the back of her mind and would not really, didn't really want to go through and talk about those events and the pain that she experienced at that loss. My mother was at her very best with babies and young children. She just adored handling babies and taking care of young children, and she liked that so much that in the state of California, when she was in her late 50s or early 60s, she went through all of the paperwork and the inspections and all of the background examinations and things like that in order to be able to set up a daycare in her home. And she just loved that. She would tell us stories about, this one is doing such and such. And, excuse me, she followed those kids through their school lives as they got older and started school and were no longer in her care. But she kept, kind of kept in touch with the family. She just loved doing that. My dad, not so much, but he put up with that. But my mother was just adored having those kids and just seeing them grow and learn and just to share that with them and to care for them while their parents were working. That was a very significant part of her personality and of her character in terms of the person that she was. Unfortunately, she started to experience in her life probably in the last 20 years of her life. There was the slow, very, very insidious development of some type of dementia. And it started out as, just very mild, something that, and now that, I'm in my 70s, I find myself doing some of the things, you're retelling stories and, whatnot, and we think, well, that person's probably heard that 8 times, or something, but they're listening to me anyway, yes, but we go through some of those stages. But in her case, there was something more to it. And she was very vocal and articulate, so she really enjoyed, telling stories, and she was certainly the family historian of that whole side of the family. And she was very interested in genealogy and some way, somehow connected with a professor at the University of Minnesota that was a distant relative. And they talked about genealogy and, she would go back through different sources. And I think at one point she had a book that was about an inch thick that had genealogy of her family back to like 1062 or something like that, which is incredible because once you get that far back, then the records are very sparse and you basically have to deal with looking at churchyards and things like that to find information about genealogy. But she just loved that. But over a period of time, that dementia increased. And, it got to, to a stage where that the stories became more repetitious. And then the loss of memory started to take place. And so those things were very significant in our family in the last 15 or 20 years of her life because of that progressive dementia. And that was something that, had profound impact upon our mother's days and our celebration of Mother's Days with Mom and the things that we shared with her. The things I wish I had told my mother, given that context. I'm certainly in that category of human beings that I thought I had more time. How many of us have been in that place? I thought I had more time. And, it's a lament that I think many of us have experienced. many of us will experience. In our immediate and extended family, this year we've had a couple of cases where someone very close to a member of the family unexpectedly died. And you know, the family members are left with, I wished I had done this or that. I wish I had reached out. If I'd have known they were that sick, I'd have called, written, or whatever. You know, I wish I had more time. Mr. Franks, in his member letter this week, made a statement kind of along those lines. In his conclusion, he said this, in the last paragraph, said, time has a way of getting away from us all. Isn't that the truth? He said that in the context of encouraging us to look back at the two holy days or the two feasts that we've already kept and then looking forward to those in the future. But time does have a way of getting away from us all. You know, I would summarize many or most of these points here or these observations that I'm going to share as I'd summarize them as they were lost opportunities. They're lost opportunities. And you think, wow, you know, wished I had known so that I could have, and then we fill in the blanks. First thing I wished I would have said to my mother more was how much I appreciated her German chocolate cakes. To this day, to this moment, I can smell those three layers of German chocolate cooking in the oven, and she, concurrent with, you know, the baking of that cake, she'd be working on the icing, which, you know, is the cholesterol nightmare. I mean, there's a ton of butter in German chocolate cake, but there's ground up or there's diced walnuts, and I believe she put coconut in there, and I mean, it was just an exquisite icing. You know, you just practically get the cake out of the way to get at the icing. You know, to this day, I can remember that. You know, and just how wonderful those German chocolate cakes were. She really didn't like to cook. She didn't, you know, think of herself as a very good cook. But I still remember the counterpoint in those German chocolate cakes. You know, I wish I would have told her, you know, more than I did, how much I appreciated those. You know, to this day, another thing that I wished I had told her is how much I appreciated the love of reading that she had personally and that she instilled in all four of her children. During the hot summers in Central California, you know, when school was out, she would take us. You know, once a week, we'd go to the city library, and we would bring home literally a box of books. Each of us would have books that we wanted to read. I read every military history that library had, with the exception of two or three books. And my sisters were avid readers. My mother would read several books a week, you know, with all that she had going on. I wished I would have told her how much I appreciated that and how much that the love of reading is such a contributor to education and to learning. I wish I would have told her how much I appreciated and respected the hardships that she endured as a child. You know, I've never had that kind of scarcity where, you know, you think of all we have to eat is some real simple biscuits. That's it. Part of the meal that is the meal. You know, I haven't personally to this time had to experience that. And there was always somewhat of a gulf, I think, between me with my limited understanding of that kind of scarcity and what that kind of scarcity does to a person in terms of their value. They look at things differently. You know, they're a lot more careful. She was a lot more careful than I am to this day about keeping things. And sometimes we say, Mom, why are you keeping that? You just throw that away, you know. But she just wasn't wired like that. I mean, she had that scarcity that she had experienced, and that was still in the back of her head. And her tendency was, you know, I may have a use for whatever this is going forward. And so she would keep stuff. You know, and I think those of you that may have gone through that understand exactly. You can empathize with that because you've been there. You've done that. But I wish that I had appreciated that more and understood that. But at the time, I didn't have the wisdom and I didn't have the experience or the knowledge to truly understand the person that she was as deeply as I would have liked to have, and as I hopefully came to a little bit later in life. I wish I would have told her how I appreciated and respected, you know, her in dealing with the things that she dealt with, you know, coming out of the Great Depression. And I wish I would have understood and appreciated how instrumental that crucible in her life was in, you know, primarily the 1930s. I wish I would have told her several things in terms of related to her example. I wish I would have appreciated her example more vocally and certainly more frequently to her. She was a very generous person. I wish I would have appreciated and stated that to her, that I appreciated her example of generosity. There was a period of time where she loved chickens for some reason. And so she would go through this stage where she'd get, you know, she'd pick out a breed of chicken that she wanted. She'd get a bunch of them, and then she would sell the eggs. And her custom was that she always sold, she charged for a dozen, but she provided a baker's dozen. And I still remember, you know, being the delivery boy, you know, riding a bicycle with a bunch of, you know, cartons of eggs, and, you know, going to the neighbors that she'd sold these things to, and, you know, seeing their expression and how unexpected that was. Well, you know, it's a dozen eggs we're paying for. Well, that's what Mom said, 13. So, you know, I'm just delivering, you know. But I look back at that, and I think that what that said about what was in her heart, I think was really special. She was really good at caring for others. I wish I would have appreciated that more greatly. She had some nurses training when she was a young woman. She was not able to continue in the medical profession because of hearing loss, which was, you know, profound. But she had that kind of a heart, and, you know, for the person that she was the coolest when there was a medical crisis, or when there was a health crisis or some kind of a medical emergency. Everybody else might be getting a little wound up or a little frazzled or, you know, a little bit undone, but she seemed to be that the worse it was as far as the health issue, the cooler and the more deliberate, the more focused that she got. And she could get frazzled over other things, you know, that wouldn't bother, you know, others very much. But when it came to health issues, and there are a couple of cases, one where one of my sisters had a horrible, horrible bicycle accident. And we had the luxury in California of living right on the edge of the foothills of the coastal range. So we were on the east side of the coastal range. So we'd get up there on the top of these things with our bicycle and go flying down, you know, the hill. I'd be scared to death to do that now, and, you know, thinking about the possibilities of crashes. But we were immortal at that age, you know. So you're not thinking about some horrible crash. But one of my sisters got a little bit confused with the type of bicycle where you push the pedal backwards to, you know, engage the brake. Some way, somehow, she hung that pedal up on something, so she was going full blast. She made it all the way down to the bottom of the hill, and we're talking a hill that's 50 yards high. So she's really flying when she gets down there. She lost control right at the bottom. Just bicycle, and she go tumbling, you know, and my other two sisters and I mean, we don't know what to do. I mean, she's basically, you know, semi-conscious at that point. Thankfully, wasn't after the fact, we learned she wasn't seriously injured. But we ran home. I ran home, got my dad, and you know, I can count on one hand the number of times that I saw, you know, he saw my dad cry. That was one of them. And he's driving his pickup, and we can see my sister 400 yards, you know, across the field, lying there on the ground, you know. And so he came up and picked her up and put her in the car. We took her back to Mom, and Mom went into that healthcare mode while the rest of us are pretty frazzled. And, you know, it all turned out well. My sister wasn't seriously injured, but I imagine we got lectured somewhere after that about bicycle management on hills. But I don't remember that part of it. But she was always cool in a health crisis. I wished I would have appreciated that more, and I wished I would have told her that. As I got older, I wished I would have told her how much I valued and respected her wisdom and her counsel. And pre-onset of dementia, I very greatly appreciated her counsel, and I sought her advice and counsel on a lot of things, and I really appreciated the level of wisdom that she offered. I wished I would have had the character to have told her that. But it wasn't until much later that I could look back on those events in terms of the times that we had talked and what we had talked about, and then too, with the advantage of the addition of a few years, to have appreciated and to appreciated the depth of the wisdom and the advice that she provided at that time. I wished I had told her how much I valued her storytelling and her writing. She was very comfortable writing, and she was a good writer, and she was a prolific writer. She was one of those people that wrote letters to family members all the time, and she was hands down the best and the most consistent in our extended family when it came to letter writing and storytelling. And I think I mentioned it a little earlier that she was the family historian. And we learned an awful lot about, you know, her experience as a little girl and, you know, teen and then a young woman and what happened with her family, her sisters, her two brothers, and just the things that she experienced. And she said her dad was quite the storyteller, and I think she had that same gift passed down to her. And she would retell some of the stories that he told her. And I still remember the one that she told about her sister dying from diphtheria. This next one is one that I wished I had done rather than something that I wished I had said. I wish that I had spent more time with her on her terms rather than on my terms. And that, to me, was very significant. And this next point relates to that, or hopefully elaborates a little bit on that, is that sometimes I found in my, as the dementia increased and as my dad started to have his health problems, and then my two sisters and I, and they did by far and away the lion's share of the care. But I found myself, analyzing, what is my perspective here? What is my approach with how I'm interacting, especially with my mother? And I found, and I came up with this, this characterization. I felt like I was task-oriented rather than care-oriented. And here's an example of that. We got meds to administer. Here's what we have at breakfast. My sister, one of them, had outlined all of the medication, had every one of the numerous pills in its own. So here's the breakfast. Here's lunch. Here's the pain pill at 2. Here's evening medications. And then here are pain pills if you need them outside of that schedule. That's task oriented. I think, check, got it. Here's what we do for breakfast. We assess at 10 o'clock whether we need a pain pill or not. Okay, we do lunch, different set of pills, 2 o'clock pain pill, assess, early evening, and on we go. And I found myself focused on the tasks rather than having the mindset and the heart of caring for her. I'm managing the pills. I'm not really caring for her as a person. And my best shot at understanding that, I think, probably comes from observing people in the nursing profession that I would say, in my experience, they were absolutely caregivers. They just had that heart. They had that orientation, that inclination, and you would see them interact with patients, and you would see that care. They certainly took care of the to-do lists. And they did their nursing profession, but it was how they were wired. It was why they did it. It was, some of it to a degree, was how they did it. It was a care orientation rather than a task orientation. I wished I would have been more care oriented and not as much task oriented. The pain meds to a large, or the medications to a large degree, we got a little latitude here. We can be off a few minutes one way or the other. It's not as big a deal, probably, as I made it out at the time that we were in that particular stage. At this point, I'd like to share a story that my sister-in-law, Dee's sister, shared with us that makes this a similar point. Judy's very good at looking at a situation, assessing it, coming up with a plan of here's how we are going to fix this, here's how we're going to remediate it, here's how we're going to take care of this need that she's observed. This took place probably in the Houston area don't remember a lot of the details, but I believe it was something around Days of Unleavened Bread in the past, and this widow had needs for help with things around the house, maybe some pre-Passover cleaning and some things like that. She basically, assessed that situation, got a number of volunteers to commit to helping her. They went over and they took, they worked quite a while, on this, and they took care of basically everything that needed to be done. The comment that was related to us by Judy was this. At one point, probably sometime in the afternoon, she went to the lady, or she was interacting with the lady about, look at what we're getting this done. What do you think? Is this acceptable? And all of that. And the lady looked at her and said, "But when are we going to visit? But when are we going to visit?" And I think that's a good example of, are we worried about vacuuming? Or are we worried about what this widow is thinking, what she's experiencing? And it's not that we can't do both, but it's just, at least in my case, I was stuck more in the pain med management task type of stuff, and not nearly as much as I would have liked to have been with the caregiving and the care orientation. Just listening, just experiencing whatever my mother had on her mind with her at that particular time. I wish I would have done that differently, because that question, still resonates in my mind. But when are we going to visit? I thought, what a remarkable statement about the need that we have, or that she had, for interaction, for fellowship, for that caregiving orientation, rather than, let's cut the grass, let's trim the plants, let's sweep the driveway, let's do this, let's wash the car, whatever. Yeah, those things need to be done, but what about that person? And I found myself more in that task orientation mode than I realized at the time. I wished I had done better at being more in the caregiving mode rather than the task orientation mode. Final point that many of us, and some of you are in the same situation: how do you honor your mother when she has made different choices than you, or when she views life differently than you? How do you perform that command that we're given in the fifth commandment to honor your father and mother when perhaps you have differences of value system, different theologies, different religions? How do you manage that? And I think that I believe it's done at a very high level, and I think it's they're simply stated. I think they're very hard to do. I think we can honor our parents even if they are no longer alive by living a godly life. I think that ultimately will bring honor to our parents. For those of you that have parents living now, living a godly life in this world today will certainly bring honor to your mother, to your parents. I think for those of us in the church, being true to our calling is the way that we can honor our parents, that we can honor our mother. I think finally of those three, remaining in the faith, being steadfast, being grounded in the faith, living that, that in that state of faithfulness as long as our lives last, or until Jesus Christ returns. That process of, and the focus of, remaining in the faith is the way that we can bring honor to our parents, and specifically for, in the context today, of our mother. I'd like to excerpt some thoughts that the Apostle Peter recorded for us in the second chapter of 1 Peter, verse 12. You're familiar with the verse, but I just want to read some excerpts in the context of how do we honor our mothers when we or she have made different choices. The Apostle Peter had this to say. He says, having your conduct honorable among Gentiles or among the people in the world, just the people that we all run into, that when they speak, some of them are going to speak against us as evildoers, or it may not be quite that strong. It may be that we just have friction over a conflict of beliefs. But how do we handle that? And then he makes the statement that by your good works which they observe, they will glorify God in the day of visitation. And that is the time, I think, where that honor will certainly be recognized. But even in today's world, I think exhibiting a godly life, being true to our calling, being faithful, remaining in the faith, you know, regardless of the impact that that has, and regardless of the friction that that may cause, still is abiding by that command to honor our mother. And I think there's certainly the promise that goes with, you know, goes with that. And in conclusion, I'd like to encourage those of you that have mothers still living to maximize the opportunities that you have to honor your mother while you yet have time. And that hopefully you can avoid falling into that pitfall of, I wish I'd had more time, or I thought I had more time. I would encourage you to take full advantage of the time that you yet have. And it's not with stuff. It's just with time spent. You know, I don't know how many of you that have experienced this. You buy your mother something and then she is, you know, is irritated that you went and spent this and got that because she really maybe doesn't want it, or is irritated that you spent your money on something that she didn't deem all that necessary. You know, probably many of us have had that same experience. But that's very different than time spent. And time spent, I believe, is where it really matters. To all the mothers here today, I wish you a very happy Mother's Day tomorrow.